Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
We've talked recently about death-related experiences with the wonderful Inika Kodum and Madeline Lawrence. Today, we're going to complete our trilogy on this amazing topic by speaking with the leading researcher in this field. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. And our guest today is Carla Wills Brandon. She's the author of the year 2000 book, One Last Hug Before I Go. And she's the most prominent living expert in the field of deathbed visions. I wrote in The Fun of Dying that her book, One Last Hug Before I Go, is a worthy successor to Sir William Barrett's groundbreaking 1926 book that coined the term deathbed visions. And let me tell you, that is saying something. Welcome, Carla.
Hi, how are you, Roberta?
I'm fine. I'm so happy to be finally talking with you.
Me too, likewise.
We're going to talk about what you learned and what you continue to learn on this topic, which I think is so important, and so few people even know about the death process and what happens as we get closer to death. But first, how did you get started in this field? What interested you and made you begin your research?
Well, the journey started when I was very young, and I began having a series of experiences with my mother, who passed at the age of 38.
Oh, my.
Yes. When I was 15, I first had what's called an empathic departing vision, deathbed vision, where I felt her die. So I was at a Sly and the Family Stone concert with my girlfriends. We were having a great day. Suddenly, I felt very sick. There was an ambulance on the premises, so I walked to the ambulance, asked if I could go lie down. They said, sure, no problem. When I awoke, the conference was over, and when I got home, I found out that I had gotten in an ambulance at the exact time my mother had been loaded into an ambulance.
Wow.
Then when she passed, I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I got out of bed. I was, still a young teenager, but I knew intuitively that she had moved on. Now, fast forward, in my 30s, I discovered that two family friends had also awakened at the moment of her passing. And then last year, I discovered my cousin and my aunt had awoken at the exact moment of her passing. So five of us had the same experience.
Oh, my goodness. Now, was your mother a psychic or in some way gifted?
I think so, because I do believe that that can travel genetically on down the line. So I think my mother definitely had abilities, but they were never explored. So for her, and because of the tragedy of her passing, I mean, she was sick from the time she was 31 till she was 38.
I'm so sorry. That's so hard when you're a child to have that kind of thing in your life.
It was difficult, and it was challenging, and there was a lot of fallout. My mother actually did come back, and she did make amends for that. And she stated that she knew she basically left me with a pile of mess.
Thanks, Mom.
So all is good there between us. But yeah. At the time, there was nobody to talk to about this stuff.
Right.
But when I got older, I started writing a series of books on trauma, PTSD, addiction. And so I traveled to England a lot to present. And one time, while I was in England, the IRA threatened to bomb the tube, which is the mode of transportation there. And so I was supposed to be on the other side of town to present, but I ended up going into an old bookstore. And you mentioned Sir Barrett. And that's
yes.
The book I first found.
And weren't you lucky? I'm sure there are very few. I have one of the original ones as well. Wow.
And I almost fell out because in that book, it described what I had experienced. So I started paying attention to my trauma clients and those who were in the throes of death and dying themselves or losing someone who was dying. And I started to hear similar experiences of seeing deceased relatives or loved ones in the room with a message that all would be well, sometimes descriptions of the afterlife, for the pure purpose of comforting the individual who is getting ready to move on, or friends and family of that individual.
Yes.
With a takeaway scenario, we're here to help this individual who's getting ready to cross to the other side, or we're here to comfort you and let you know this is what's going to be happening. So that's how it started out.
So you then started doing research on your own into this phenomenon?
Well, here's the deal. I'm a private practitioner, so I don't have the backing of a university or a hospital.
Yes,
or
none of us do. Oh, it's not fair at all.
Not fair at all. And so what I started doing is I just started collecting accounts. And I've collected so many accounts over the years, I've lost count.
Yeah.
And I've gotten accounts from around the world, Japan, Israel, Italy, of course, England, Ireland, Scotland, the States, Canada. I mean, you name it, I've gotten an account from someone living in that area. And the theme is always the same. So recently, a medical student started corresponding with me about, well, how are these not hallucinations?
Oh, yes. That's a very, very good question, which you can answer easily.
And I work with people who at times hallucinate in my clinical practice.
Right.
And so if 10 people show up in my practice and, you know, for the day they're all hallucinating, each hallucination is going to be very different and specific to that person. And it can involve deceased people, living people, animals. It can involve all sorts
yes,
of things.
Strange but, things, right.
But there is no consistency. If I see 10 people in one day who have had a departing vision or witnessed a departing vision, the themes will be the same. If it's for the people who survive an individual who has crossed over, they will have received a premonition,
yes,
a visitation, maybe from the person who is in the process of crossing over, and then they will receive a phone call that this has occurred. The person in a hospital on the other side of town or in a home on the other side of the country, and they will either have a visitation, a full-blown they will see the individual, or they may see an orb of light, or yes, the person may come to them in a dream, and then, or they'll see in the doorway light, or one person actually talked about a light being visiting them with permission.
Yes, yes. And what I tell people, because that's a common question, when I tell people that it seems to be a universal phenomenon, and we can talk about why that happens, your book actually was what made me decide why it probably happens, but when I tell people about this, they'll say, bah, that's just a hallucination, or, you know, people make things up, or they're comforting themselves because they're going to go into oblivion, they're making themselves feel less afraid. Okay, well, a few things. Of course, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who spent most of her career as a skeptic, and even as a skeptic about life after death, this woman, unbelievably brave, was spending her weekends comforting dying children as they died because of auto accidents back in the, you know, 50s and 60s. And she said what convinced her this was real was that she would have the child and she'd know who basically died at the scene in the family and who had survived and was in the hospital. And the child, she'd say, ask the child, can you tell me what you see? And the child would say, oh, it's okay, mom is here for me. But then the child would say, oh, and so is, you know, little Paul or some other name that she knew was alive. But when she, after the child she was comforting passed, she would call the hospital where that this Paul supposedly was, and she said, in every case, everybody that the child who was passing saw actually was dead. Even if they only had just died minutes before, they were seen at that bedside. Now, I think that's wonderful, but it's proof that this is real, or else she said their record was perfect. She had seen many children pass, and this was a perfect record they had. They had never seen anybody who was still alive. Isn't that amazing and great?
And here's the interesting part about her. She put an entire chapter about those experiences in her first book.
Yes.
But she was afraid that her book wouldn't be taken seriously, so she took that out.
Are you serious?
I've had three books on this topic, and so in the most recent book on Departing Visions, I include a discussion about that because I thought, how sad.
Isn't that awful? She's one of my really big heroes. What a brilliant visionary. And fearless. Yeah. She went from a total skeptic to traveling out of her body with Bob Monroe. I mean, we're talking here.
She definitely was. But those experiences where you have someone who is getting ready to cross over, and then they see somebody and they talk to family that is surrounding them. This one woman I know, her father was in a nursing home, and while he was in the nursing home, her brother was murdered. Oh. And so she and her remaining sibling decided to not share this information with the father. And so he was in a situation where he wasn't watching the news or listening to radios or reading the newspaper. But when she and her other siblings showed up for a visit, he said, "Isn't it wonderful? All my siblings are here." And then he said, "Oh, but so-and-so is not really here. He's over there." And so what he was talking about, the short story, was that he knew that the son was in the next dimension.
How did he know? Did he say?
He didn't say, but there was a bit of a tiff between he and his daughter. Because his daughter knew what he was talking about, and she made a comment, and she said that he looked at her like she was as dumb as a post.
Oh, jeez. So, oh.
Yeah. So definitely, there are lots of accounts like that.
There are.
And the skeptics, I love throwing those skeptics, because the skeptics, they don't know what to say. They will argue. I've had skeptics take one piece of one account and not add in other content and then use that to set me up to be some kind of goofball. So there is an investment by the skeptics to not really look at this stuff.
The problem they have is that there's so much overwhelmingly consistent evidence that life is eternal, you know, and how it works and all of that. It's all the evidence that's been developed entirely without their input and really against anything that they were attempting to do, that inevitably this is all going to come crashing down on them. And I think I know how and when it's going to happen. But they've got every finger and toe in the dike. They're waiting. They're trying to make this revelation to the world not happen until after they have retired. Please not during my career. I still need to feed the children. Seems to be their attitude. But you're right. It's absurd the extent to which they will go to try to falsify what is true. It's insane.
You know, I've collected probably over 2,000 accounts from people, doctors, lawyers, and a lot of people, what they'll say to me when they share an account with me is, "I am fully employed and, you know,
yes,
responsible and this, that, and the other."
I'm not crazy.
Right. I'm not crazy is another one.
Right.
But the skeptics, they have a lot of power. They have a lot of media power.
They're paid
very well. So there's a financial investment for them to not take a look at this information. And
yes.
So I'm sure you get this too, but
people will
come to me and they will say, "I found you on the web," or "somebody said something about what you do, and I feel like maybe you're a safe person to share this with." And I think that's really, really sad because, you know, time ago, these experiences were common.
Yes.
They were common. They were part of the process of moving from this life to the next. And so what would happen is that the family would be around the individual who was getting ready to pass. Goodbyes would be said. There was an understanding that everybody would meet again. Wills would be read.
My goodness, yes.
Disputes would be solved. And people at the bedside would even ask questions. "Do you see Grandpa?" Or,
"Yes.
Does Mother have a message for me?" And so what began to happen with the materialistic advancement of our society is that this stuff got pushed aside. And so there's so many people out there who have had these experiences, and they just don't know where to go.
Right.
My mother-in-law was, her mother died in the Holocaust, and she lost family in the Holocaust. And she could never get over that grief. And she wouldn't read my books on the topic because it was very sad. But when she passed, she had departing visions.
Yes.
And my father-in-law came to her, and she was arguing with him about why she didn't want to go yet. And we were going, hey, it's okay, you can go. And the rabbi came in and said, Elizabeth, you can go. Go be with Salva. It's okay.
Yes.
And she would not go until her mother showed up, her mother. And once her mother showed up, there was this wonderful reunion that we all in the room witnessed.
Oh, wow.
And shortly after that, I was at home. I wasn't there when she moved on, but I have a tendency to wake up in the middle of the night when somebody moves on. And so I woke up and I got up and waited for my husband to call me.
Goodness.
But the thing that was so sad is that the hospice person, most hospice people are great. But this one hospice person, we had to ask her to leave the room because she didn't understand departing visions.
Are you serious? And she's in a hospice?
Yes.
Everyone that I have talked with who is a hospice volunteer has told me that they see this stuff all the time. It's normal to them. So this woman must have been a fool.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, thank goodness our family is pretty aware of this stuff, and it's common discussion in our family. And my boys make fun of me. They tell me that I'm a weirdo, and because of the things that I do, and because
we are never a prophet in our own village, said Jesus, and it is so true with our children. Oh my goodness!
Oh yeah, and especially with you know the genetic things that have been passed on down the line. And I think I have one son who has ability, and so I'll say something to him, and he tells me he doesn't want to be like me, and. So, but you know, but
the highest form of flattery. I don't want to be anything like you. Oh my.
But my point being that it's common discussion for us. But my thought is this: what if the family hadn't been us, and it had been some other family who had a hospice worker, and this family seeing their loved one
have
these grand, marvelous, fantastic healing, reunions with. Someone like my husband's grandmother, who died in Auschwitz in the gas chambers.
She was there?
Oh, of course. Yes, she was.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
And so this reunion on the physically dying bed, I watched my mother-in-law heal from wounds that she had carried.
Oh, isn't that a beautiful story?
And it was incredible. And wouldn't it have been terrible if the hospice worker or physician or nurse who was there had said that's a hallucination?
Isn't that? Yes, absolutely. Oh, what a wonderful story. So she was troubled all her life, and you got to see her heal because she got to see her mother. How isn't that a fabulous thing?
It was wonderful, wonderful. And then she supposedly passed very peacefully. So,
well, I have a sort of story to share. One of the things I've come to suspect is that my guides are trying to give me experiences that will strengthen, broaden what I know, and in some cases, uncomfortably so. The only person I have ever heard of who refused to go with their deathbed visitors was my own mother. I didn't know it was possible. Until I was called to her bedside, she was 86 or 87, and they said that she was dying, and it was impossible for her to survive because it was, I don't know, end-stage heart failure. That's what it was. She was already in a coma. So I sat and sat, and she started to get better. And the first thing she said to me when she was again lucid was that her parents had been there. And this astonished me. She told me they had come. They had said it was time for her to go. And she had said, I don't think so. I'm staying here. So her mother had then said, well, you'd better take your medicine then. And her parents had walked out of the room. Well, so I said, well, that's very strange. I didn't know you could do that and just tell them you were going to pass on dying. But she did. So 2 weeks later, she was in rehab. And I went to visit her one morning, you know, in a nursing home in rehab. And she said, they're letting me stay longer. I said, who? And she said, well, they. I said, well, how do you know? And she said, the big, tall man told me. She described a being of light. She had no idea they existed, but about an 8-foot-tall man had walked into her room the night before, glowing, and had said to her, we've decided that since you want to stay, we're going to let you stay a little longer, and then had walked out of the room.
Okay.
And I got her to describe in detail what this man looked like. And I was appalled, because obviously that meant she had lived past her last exit point. We all plan our exit point. She looked past the end. I didn't again know you could. But I got to see what happened, Carla. She died by inches. By the time she died at 93, she had no activities of daily living. She was basically a potted plant, which makes me understand that the people in nursing homes that we see who are in such awful shape probably all made that choice, which I didn't even know you could make. So one of the things I say when I give talks is, if you remember nothing else from today, a couple of things I say. Number one is, go with your deathbed visitors. But number two, do not make the decision to refuse that opportunity to leave your body, because the future is not pleasant. If you see them, you got to go with them. But isn't that a strange story?
Here's the deal. That I have accounts like that. And
really?
I just had a client who shared something like that with me. And it sounded like there was a negotiation with her spirit team, and there was a lesson that she needed to learn. And so they had, like I said, they negotiated for whatever reason.
Really?
It was between them. Yes.
That's good to hear that my mother's not the only one, but it was so likely.
No. Actually, it happens a lot, because I believe that people can make a decision to cross over. They can, and that's actually been documented with palliative care in hospitals. And then there are some people, I just went to the funeral of a woman who fought and fought and fought and fought, and she had been so sick for so long, and she was so miserable. And I was talking to another friend of mine, like-minded friend, and we decided that must have been something she needed to learn.
There was
a lesson there, and most likely it was negotiated with her spirit team. So I'm really sad to hear that your mother had to go through that.
Well, that's
it. Sounds like it was necessary for her spiritual evolution.
Well, here's what I worry about, Carla, okay, because this is not the only time that something weird has happened that I got to see. I worry that it's my guides using these situations to teach me things. I mean, if indeed it was an internal negotiation, there's no reason for a being of light to have appeared in her room. That was for me to let me know that's what was happening. So I have felt guilty about that. I'm so reassured by you. Thank you. That maybe there were opportunities in growth as well for her. I'm so glad to hear that.
No. This was a negotiation between her and her spirit team. It's kind of like this. I have a wonderful mentor for a mental mediumship. I've been a medium all my life. But my mentor says, I let my brain get in the way too much, and I'm not going to hang out a shingle anytime soon, but it is something that, I deal with, but here's my point. My mother died when she was 38 years old.
Yes.
And that was a negotiation between her and her spirit team. But yes, it did impact me. I wouldn't be where I am at if she had survived and stuck around.
That's
so
right. I do see that.
I do believe we're all connected, and that everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it is for spiritual growth and evolution.
Yeah.
And so your mother learned some things, you learned some things, and it worked out exactly the way it was supposed to work out.
Well, that's very comforting, dear. I appreciate your saying that. As I say, I have felt bad, because it seemed to me that uh, you know, I But she's happy now. I spoke with her a few months ago. The first thing she said was, "You were right about everything. Thank you, Mom." And then the next thing she said was, but she was traveling around to check the details of my books. So I have a fact checker there.
Okay. So she's mothering you from the beyond.
She certainly is, which is what she would do.
Okay. That's really sweet. Yeah. So the bond isn't severed. So.
I tell people love is all that really lasts. And anybody you love, you're certainly going to be still bonded with. I want to talk, Carla, more specifically about the process and what these visions are like. But first, I'm just going to pause and say, this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch. You can learn more about my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Our guest today is Carla Wills Brandon, who is the world's leading expert on the amazing experiences that people often have as they're dying. I think these are universal, Carla. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. Based on all the accounts I've gotten, the language may be a little bit different. There are two people who did extreme research.
Yes.
They kind of jumped off William Barrett's stuff. And it was Carlos Osis and Erlinger Haraldson.
I have their book right in front of me, At the Hour of Death. I love this one, too.
Oh, yes. And Erlinger and I keep in touch. And they did a longitudinal study on deathbed visions. First, Carlos Osis did a pilot study on Sir William Barrett's work. And then the two of them not only passed out questionnaires all over the United States to physicians, nurses, other medical people, but to people in India.
Yes, that's what was interesting about this, really surprising.
Yes, and what they found was the language might be a little bit different, but the description of the visions were incredibly similar.
Yes.
They also discovered that atheists had these experiences, that it didn't matter what mode of passing was in play. A person could be on medication, not on medication. They could be having heart disease, or they could have cancer. It didn't matter. None of that mattered. What they discovered was that these experiences across these two cultures were incredibly similar, regardless of age, sex. And so that was groundbreaking information for me, too.
This is big. The book is At the Hour of Death. It's a 1997 book. And from the back, they did a 4-year study involving 50,000 terminally ill patients observed just before death by 1,000 doctors and nurses in the U.S. and in India. So I'd say that's a broad enough sample, wouldn't you think?
Yes, it was. And the thing is Erlinger, he is in his 80s. Dr. Osis has passed on. But he hangs out with one of my publishers, which cracks me up, in the UK.
It's a small, incestuous world.
It is. And they recently went to investigate reincarnation in India. The two
really? Really? Yeah. How fun.
Traipsing across India, talking with people who had incidents of reincarnation. So he's very, very involved. He continues to be involved. But what is so interesting about their work is that they were the first. Barrett was the first to document, to really document in the modern age these accounts with his wife, who was a surgical gynecologist. And so they documented these accounts. Then Osis and Haraldson, what they did is they took it a step farther, and because they started out as skeptics too, the two of them, and then they were baffled by the consistency, and that's what's important when it comes to departing vision. So any of your listeners who are sitting out there, sitting on top of some sort of experience like this, they're going to feel very alone, like, what is this about? Why did I have this experience? Yeah. What does it mean? But when they take a look at all of the other people who are out there who have had these exact similar experiences sitting at the bedside as somebody who's getting ready to pass, and they begin to talk about seeing their deceased mother, father, son,
it's
daughter.
Always happening. Yes, it's mm-hmm. it's universal.
It's very, very consistent. It's not like a hallucination, which is inconsistent from person to person.
Right.
So, yes, it's incredibly universal.
Yeah, I think I figured out, I don't know what in your book made me figure this out, but I hadn't understood why we had them until I read your book. And I have a theory. My theory is the problem in our culture, and in fact in all cultures, is that none of them prepare us for what it feels like to die and what actually happens at death. So there we were imprisoned in a boat anchor, that dying body, and suddenly we're young, happy, healthy, free, couldn't feel better possibly in our lives, and everybody's around us that we used to think were dead. Now they're right here. We're very happy and excited. And we're clueless. If we didn't have those people there, it seems to be as important as it is to have someone help deliver the baby, just as important it seems to be to have people we trust there to take us to the next level of reality. And I think that's why they happen. I mean, obviously, they're a beautiful part of dying, and one of the reasons dying is fun for people tell us who have died that it's often the best time of their lives. But it also seems to be necessary to have these people that we're going to trust come and say, you know, okay, look, it's time to go. Come with us. We're going to be fine. And then take us through the lowest vibratory levels that are closest to the earth, which are not pleasant, and into the Summerland levels, which are 3 to 5, which are. Don't you think? At least that's an explanation for why they're so universal.
Well, yes. I mean, it would be very scary if we just watch people, animals pass on, and that was it.
Yes.
To know that someone has come to collect our loved one, for those of us who are the survivors, it's incredibly reassuring, because I've had clients come in with lots of death phobia, extreme
yes.
phobia. And I get children who come in with death phobia.
Oh.
There has been the passing of somebody in the family, and the parents are death phobic, and there's maybe a rigid religious belief system, but there's still that fear of death and dying. And so one of the first things I will do is go to YouTube and find appropriate videos that these family members can watch, and I'll give them a series of them. I also have a big YouTube channel on my of my own, but for kids, there are other little videos that work really, really well. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh my gosh, that makes perfect sense. It's
yes.
like intuitively, it makes sense.
It does, right? Exactly. I think people who have been through this with loved ones. You're right. It so much relieves the fear of death. It relieves grief tremendously, too. And then there's Dr. Raymond Moody, who seems to be on the cutting edge of everything that happens. He was the one who coined the term life after life. And he coined in 2010 the term shared deathbed visions when he wrote Glimpses of Eternity. And he talked about people who actually share in the experience. They also see the wherever the dead person, dying person sees, and they sometimes actually leave their bodies and go the part way with the person who is dying. Do you get reports like that too?
Yeah, they used to be called empathetic departing visions, and they're not that uncommon. And I know Raymond. I went to Raymond's house years ago with a group of people, and we experimented with his psychomantium.
Oh, I almost did that. Was it fun?
Well, yes. All of my relatives showed up. They all showed up in mass. The temperature dropped in the psychomantium.
Oh, wow.
It was the most powerful experience of love I've ever encountered.
Oh, I'm so glad. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, I couldn't talk about it for years, and I ended up putting it in one of my books. But, yeah, he is always on the cutting edge. my cousin had a vision like that. Last year, the year before, when his wife passed and he left his body and he traveled with her to the next level, it was described as being very bright and colorful, and that all of her relatives were there. and that he was only allowed to go so far, and then he was told, it's not your time yet, you still have things to do.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yes. And then she came back in an after-death communication and showed him in a dream where she was, what she was doing, and told him that he still had a mission and he wasn't done. So, yeah, in Moody's book, he actually, most of his collection in that book are empathetic or shared departing visions.
Yeah, so. I recommend it. Like all his books, it's an easy read. It's called Glimpses of Eternity, and it's been out for 5 years. So all right, let's talk about you're sitting in a deathbed. How would you know that your loved one is starting to get these experiences, and about when would they start?
These experiences, I had a guy who had a mother who he had lunch with every Sunday. The mother told him, in a year, I will be passing. Oh. And the son said, that's ridiculous. And she said, no, I will. And within a year, she passed. That's a very extreme example.
Yes, I'll say. Can you tell us the hour, Mom, so we can plan our day?
Right. Definitely. But typically what happens is that there will be a premonition of some sort. So yes. I have one friend who sees a certain type of animal, and that tells her that someone close to her is going to cross over. I have certain types of premonitions also. And usually what I do when I have a message or an awareness and a dream state or some sort of premonition is I write it down on a calendar. I document it on a calendar. So a lot of people who had premonitions about 9/11 had documented on a calendar the day that they had their premonitions, which are usually before a major event. But for someone who, a loved one who is getting ready to cross over, we may have a dream that they come to us and they tell us that they're going to be leaving soon. Or we may wake up and see them at the end of the bed and they may have a message for us. Or if we are caretaking someone who is ill, they may start doing something called the deathbed stare, which is where they will look at a particular part of the room and they will just stare at it, and they may nod their heads even.
Yeah.
And we will be sitting by the side of the bed, and if we don't know what that is, we might become concerned.
Yes.
That something's wrong with our loved one. Well, in reality, there's a visitor there, and communication is going on.
And it's telepathic. Yes. My understanding is that it can be a couple of days before death, or it could be even just in the hours before death. What's typical?
Well, that's it. It depends on the person. So my mother-in-law started having visitations a couple of days before. Other family members, minutes before,
yes.
Hours before, one a week before. In my the accounts that I have, they're anywhere from a week to, but typically days, hours, minutes.
Yes.
That's the most common, sitting by the bedside. One nurse who was caretaking a man, and she was very kind to him, took a break and went home to take a shower. And then she received a message from him while she was in the shower. He was thanking her for being so kind.
Oh, how lovely.
And then when she got out of the shower, she called the facility and they said, yes, he had crossed. So it's not like a set time, but the things that people need to look out for are, first of all, that stare, that peculiar stare, because a lot of times that causes concern. Just be aware. And the proper thing to do is to even ask, who are you talking to? What do you see? And then to have a pad and pencil and to write it down.
That's important, actually. This is a family experience of great import. To be at a deathbed, there are other people who are going to want to know all the details. If you can get the person to talk a little bit about who they see and what the person they see is saying, how precious that is.
Well, yeah, it's a family gem. And so there was this lawyer who I used to do legal work with, and all of a sudden I got a strange, message from him. about something about his father, and he didn't understand. And what had happened is his father had Alzheimer, and he became clear for a few seconds and had clear communication with the family that was around him. And then suddenly he sat up out of bed and raised his hands, and he said he wanted to go home.
Oh. So
a lot of times those who have departing visions, they will talk about taking a trip or needing to get ready for a trip or wanting to go home. That's very, very common. Sometimes they will say things like, I didn't know he or she was over there. What are they doing over there? Which is about a relative or friend who's...
Yes.
And then the family finds out later that, yes, that individual did pass. But they will start... it's like they'll have a two-way conversation going on. They'll be talking to those of us that are still in the material world, while at the same time talking to people who are in the spirit world. Sometimes the people they're talking to can be people we don't know, so we need to write their names down.
That's an important point. If this is, again, I want to stress again, if you're going to be at a deathbed, have a notebook in hand, have pencil and paper, because people may say things, maybe they're not related to the visitors, but they may have words to say that you want to share with family and friends. And you're right. If they're starting to see somebody that you've never heard of, I think that's another important thing to write down.
Most definitely, because a young child had visions of a grandfather he had never met. And so when he told his parents about this, they didn't know how to take it. And so the parents pulled out a book full of photographs and just let the child look through it, and then the child pointed out the grandfather.
And it was the grandfather?
It was the grandfather.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, having an awareness that just because somebody is using a name, that doesn't mean that it's some sort of hallucinatory experience. That write that name down and then ask questions, ask older family members. But yeah, because then when you have a documentation of an experience, that becomes a family gem that can be passed on down to the following generations. And I'm going to tell you something. My son's generation, even my generation, you know, I'm a baby boomer. There is so much death phobia. It is absolutely
awful. Yeah, it's tragic, actually, because it's the best time of your life to be afraid of it. And what comes after, it's even better. So to be afraid of is ridiculous.
Definitely.
Right.
So one woman had a departing vision. I just got a message from her, and she said that what she received from her father was, I'm going now, I'm going home, and I'll see you soon.
Yep.
So, and there was an understanding because this woman also has ability, but she just, her religion is interfering with her, her ability. So, but the thing is that, yes, there's a lot of death phobia out there. There's a lot of focus on a youth culture. And so what's happening is that there are several generations who don't have this information. So if that information is documented, like my sons right now, like I mentioned before, they're kind of like, oh, Mom, you're a weirdo. And
but when you have grandchildren who say the same thing, that's where I am at this point.
Oh, I know. But you've documented information, too. And someday, they're going to need that information.
Everybody will. This is one thing everybody will do. Everybody will die, and everybody will have people that they love go before them. So we need, this is crucial information. The fact that our loved ones come, I think, is pretty well documented. But some people also see religious figures, right?
Yeah, some do. And Kubler-Ross said something really interesting. She made it crystal clear in her usual Swiss manner.
Yes.
She's probably smoking a Camel cigarette when she said it. She said that there are times when we will see who we need to see.
Yes.
So this is very, very interesting. A lot of people will see a light being and they will think it's Jesus, or they will think it's an angel or some sort of religious figure. because that goes with a comfort level for them.
Right.
So maybe they are seeing Jesus. I don't know. But that has come up on numerous occasions. So, and usually it is a light being. It's a being of light, and there's a lot of love there, and it's very comforting.
Yes.
Or they will be taken by the family to the light being. So in that instance, that's what they need at that time. So that's more important than family. Let's put it that way.
Whatever people, if you're at a deathbed, whatever someone that you love says, he or she sees, could be a pet too. Pets sometimes show up, right? Right, Carla? I've heard of, you know, childhood dogs, and there's a story, and I think it's in Sir William Barrett's book about someone who, the only person he could stand to be have around him was an old white cart horse. So that's what showed up to claim him when he died and made him suddenly happy when he'd been a grouch all his life. So it could be pets, but be aware and be alert and write down who these people are and validate whatever it is. I don't care if it sounds like it doesn't make sense. Validate it for the person who is dying, because this is a very important time of that person's life. It's a significant time for you as well to be losing, you think, someone that you love. But think of what an important time it is for that person. You don't want to burst any bubbles. You want to open everything up that you possibly can for that person to have joy in the experience.
Well, also, you want to ask a lot of questions. So Art Bell, he had an experience with his father that involved an animal. And it's a pretty well-known account. When my mother-in-law was at home, and the dog had been taken to the vet by my father-in-law. And my mother-in-law was reading the newspaper, and suddenly she felt a brush of fur run along her leg.
Wow.
And she looked up at the clock, and she had the time. And then she looked down, and her dog wasn't there. And so she thought she was just imagining it. Well, at that exact moment at the vet, the dog was being put to sleep.
Yes.
Because the vet had found something wrong with the animal. So, you know, we've had, Michael and I, my husband, we've had experiences with pets. And I wanted to put a chapter about pets in one of my books. And I got a lot of flack for it, because the thought was, if I put something in, that book was called... Oh, what was that book called? I can't even remember. That's horrible.
You've written too many books.
Yeah. But I was told that I would diminish departing vision research if I talked about pets.
Absolutely not. This is, yeah. you know, and I know that for many people, their truest friends are their animals. And
that's
to
right.
know, that's probably the most common question. If there were one single question that I get from people, either by email or if I give a talk, and you probably have the same experience, what happens to animals when they die? And when I tell them that any animal you've ever loved is going to be waiting for you, and you don't have to walk them, and you don't have to feed them, and they're young, it's joy. Everyone is overjoyed to hear that.
Well, the thing that's funny is that the accounts that I have that involve animals are always joyful. They're
yes.
always... one person had every animal they'd ever owned show up. A woman in South Africa, she sent me a letter, actually, describing she had a pet potbelly pig, and the pig was there, showed up in a departing vision. So I included that chapter in my book regardless. The deal is that asking as many questions as one feels comfortable in doing so. With the process of dying, if one has a departing vision, typically they have more peace. So they can be a very combative, difficult patient
right.
or difficult person before. And then they'll have a departing vision, and all of a sudden, what's interesting also is that, you know, we talked about mothering from beyond. There are some individuals who will have a departing vision. They know where they're going to go. They've talked with the relatives. And then they stick around because they want to make sure their loved ones are okay.
Yes.
So they'll stick around for an hour or so just to make sure.
Yeah.
Just to And it's part of their journey, and it's part of their spiritual evolution. And there's like a total personality change and a kindness that comes, a softness. And then once there is this sense that, oh, they're going to be okay. Because, see, when somebody is in the initial process of dying, if they don't know what's going on or they don't have the information about afterlife experiences, yeah, it can be an emotional challenge. But then once they have the experience, they're not self-consumed anymore. And so they become other aware.
Yes. This is one of the most transformative experiences that we'll have in our lives. And it happens to all of us. And just being aware of it, I mean, your book is such a service. I really want everyone to read it just because it's the most sort of concise and detailed account I've ever read of this. I'm so sorry we're coming to the end of our time, Carla. You and I are going to need to talk again. I just want to say that if you'd like to hear more from Carla, please come to the Academy for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies Life in the Afterlife Conference in Scottsdale in September. It's September 25th to 27th. Just go to ascsi.org for more information. I'm the co-chair of it, so I'll be there. But you'll get to meet Carla and hear some of these stories. And everybody, all of the presenters, all 25 of them, are of her caliber. They're very, very knowledgeable people in all the different aspects of what happens before, during, and after death. So this is going to be an epic conference. And again, just go to ascsi.org for more information. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. When you fully grasp all the implications of that fact, it's going to change everything in your life. And if you'd like to learn more of some of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My own nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch. You'll find details about all my books and my blog. Please read my blog. I love writing it, and I love hearing from people who read it. You'll find all of that at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest next week is Dr. Stafford Betty. He is one of the few serious researchers who is holding down a university career. He's a professor of both religion and afterlife studies at the California State University in Bakersfield. And he writes a series of wonderful books. We're going to be talking with him about his research. You'll be fascinated, so please don't miss this. This week, we've been speaking with the amazing Carla Willis Brandon. I can't tell you, Carla, as I say, how much I enjoyed your book. One last hug before I go. This book is 15 years old. It's cutting edge still. It's the best book around on the topic of deathbed vision. So I urge you to read it, because when your turn comes to sit at someone's bedside, and it will, you're going to want to be alert for the wonderful signs that people we used to think were dead have come and have joined the person that you love right there at the bedside with you to carry your loved one safely home. So make sure you're ready for that wonderful, wonderful moment. And it is a wonderful moment when you all come together. And as Carla says, some of these experiences are so glorious and so healing, because there is no such thing as death. It's a temporary separation. This helps you to affirm that. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.